Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 341 of the Roguecast, recorded July 20th, 2021. Sure, there's TMIs, but there are no revs. All right, we're back with another episode.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, let's gauge the excitement of that room.
Tired, very tired.
Look, there's some good stuff going on this week,
there is,
though.
There is. Notable.
We're going to talk about Loki at the end.
Yep.
And we're going to talk about Alligator Loki.
Probably.
And we're going to talk about, like, things revealed in the last episode.
Randy loves Alligator Loki so much he bought a shirt.
I did. I bought a shirt.
What a nerd.
And then Moon Knight. We'll talk about Moon Knight came out this week.
Yep.
Right.
Lots of number ones,
the
actually.
Pretty much the biggest push that character has ever had, no doubt, is prelude to the Netflix show. Not Netflix, but Disney Plus.
Yes.
Don't blaspheme in this.
we might talk about the Forgotten Realms magic set, which has been pretty cool so far.
Yeah.
They announced another D&D book, the Fizban's Guide to Dragons or something.
Yep. And for those who don't know, Fizban is like a kind of a goofy side, somewhat like a goofier Gandalf wizard from the Dragonlance series and setting.
Is he akin to like an Orko?
No,
he's not that goofy. He's
scatterbrained, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But it's all an axe.
Spoiler warning, yeah, he's actually the embodiment of like the God of Good.
He's like Bahamut, right?
Yeah, which I guess is itself is a bit of a ripoff of Gandalf, because Gandalf was an angelic type being secretly. He's like one of the Iluvatar or whatever.
What? For real?
Yeah, that's a for real thing.
Isn't that revealed?
He's essentially you got to read Silmarillion stuff to like get much on that
before you get the little tidbit.
I mean, it's not like a surprise ending. I think the deal is that like a fair number of them go and like. I think all the wizards actually on Earth are not like, it's not like you go and study and become a wizard.
But you learn that
it's
on
like
page
wizards are godlike beings who take on the guise
but
of.
But you learn that on fireworks. Page like 976.
Yeah, I was imagining it's like Dave says, like it's not a twist ending. Like you read all like 1,100 pages of the Silmarillion. The last line is, by the way, Gandalf's an angel god.
Well, no, they reveal that in the timeline that is in the back of the Silmarillion.
Right. Yeah.
Which there is a timeline in the back of the Lord.
By the way, I know I said whatever like. The end said the name of their god, which there actually is, even though it's scarcely mentioned.
Now people are going to kill.
I know.
Don't
I know.
Me, as the kids
I know my lack of knowledge. I didn't read the Silmarillion.
I've also not read the Silmarillion or the Lord of the Rings.
But anyway, Fizban is from the Dragonlance world, and so they've chosen him as the narrator of this book about dragons.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Which is cool.
And I think because he is kind of like a charmingly daft old man, I think he'll be kind of a fun narrator.
Yeah, that's a cool idea.
And also, that pairs up with the Strixhaven book they're doing. That's the next magic one. And the Wild Beyond the Witchlight, which we found out is going to have D&D characters in it.
Yeah, the D&D cartoon characters.
Yes, although from what I have read, it's actually not the kids.
No.
It's more like Warduke.
It's Warduke, Strongheart, and Kellek.
Right, which were in fact like characters that like Warduke showed up a few times on the show, but the rest of them were just like in an episode.
I'm just saying it's a cool thing.
It is, but like you say the characters from the cartoon and people think it's the kids.
Yes.
Yeah. No, they only live and got their ending in that car commercial from a little while.
That's right. Also, they did get magic cards. They're like there's one of their secret layer drops. I think we talked about you can get each of
years and years ago periodically does still. The guy who was like one of the staff writers for the show had written an ending to the show. It just went unproduced.
That. Yeah, I never read it, but I do know that it exists.
The script is out there, and there is a read through of it with I think maybe some like limited animation that somebody put together for YouTube, and it might even have like most of the original voice actors. I can't remember quite.
In this day and age, I don't know why it hasn't been produced.
It's quite a good ending. Like, it still has a bit of that Saturday morning cartoon of the 80s vibe, which is we have not yet achieved, like, at that point, Gargoyles or Avatar or Batman the Animated Series level quality, but pretty damn good for the 80s.
Yeah.
And for like, wrapping something up, so... Yeah. But I do think it'd be fun if they did an adventure, like a kind of a retro adventure where you play the kids dropped in there and you can talk, you can like bring your cell phone and like be talking about all the modern technology and stuff you want because you are playing a kid from the 21st century.
That would be fun.
Or as they were at the time, the 20th century.
That's true. Or the 19th century.
That would be from the 1800s. The old Western kids.
Well, we got in the old buggy ride, and the buggy went through this demon face, and then we were trapped in the world of Dungeons and Dragons, which is very much like our own world, except with less indoor plumbing.
We decided we wanted to stay there and not participate in the Civil War.
Like, sure, there's Tiamats, but there are no Rebs.
Yes.
Well, that went to a weird place.
It did go to a weird place.
I think that could be the title for the episode.
It's possible. All right, so moving on.
What were we even talking about?
We did do our Magic pre-release, which went really well.
Our first pre-release in like a year plus.
So I have to know.
Yeah.
Did you get trounced by people?
Randy kicked ass.
Two of my games out of the six that I played.
Wow, nice. Yes. Did Anna get trounced?
Two out of three. If you only won two out of six, you get your ass kicked.
I did get my ass kicked. So the way it works, you play three rounds, and each round is the best of three.
Yeah.
So
the first game I played, I won. The second game I played in that round, I got my ass kicked. And the third game, I believe it was close, but I did lose. And then the second time, got my ass kicked the first time. Won the second one, but partly because he was not getting good draws, so it's like it felt like a cheap victory. And then had a close game, but lost in the third one. So
all right, this is more like the first Rocky movie. You went the distance.
I went the distance. Yes.
Yeah. You were there.
How did Anna do?
You were not bloodied and on the floor. You stood up to Apollo Creed.
So that's right. I did. And Apollo Creed pummeled my face.
Yeah, except
with a vorpal sword.
Apollo Creed in this case was War Duke.
Yes. Anna did all right. I believe the first game she had a bad go, but then her second round, I think she did better.
Nice.
So.
Well, now you have paper magic cards, and now you will be inducted and have to buy more and more and more.
Look, I can't say that I don't want to buy more Forgotten Realms cards. This set is really cool.
Yeah.
What other cool stuff from D&D does it have in there?
So, like, I've been playing it on Arena as well, which I've seen a lot of. There's Mordenkainen is in there.
Yeah. One of the big wizards.
What's his name? Volo.
Volo.
Volo card.
Yep.
There is Infected Drizzt. Anna really wants a Drizzt. Apparently she read those books until they fell apart.
They were formative.
Does Drizzt have a Gwynevar?
When Drizzt comes into play, he summons a Gwynevar token, yes.
Oh, very cool. So he's very much like a Minsk and Boo kind of situation.
Yes, Minsk and Boo are in there. There's also Brunor, Battlehammer, Caddybri, Wolfgar, all the Icewind Dale characters.
Including Regis the Halfling?
No, Regis the Halfling.
He was in there.
Not, though.
Dave.
The first book is called The Halfling's Gem. He got the title.
Yeah. Dave. Halflings. They don't mean anything.
He's more like half-assed.
But they've got magic missile spells. They've got shocking grasp.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff I was curious about.
Is there a fun mimic card?
There is a mimic card.
That is awesome.
The mimic, you can tap it to, you can sacrifice it to get any one color of mana, or you can spend some mana and it becomes a 3/3 creature for that turn.
Oh, I like it.
So it
like,
sits there being a chest until it comes out and be a piece of creature.
Pretty neat.
Yeah, there's a lot of... They have a bunch of dragons.
I heard there's some kind of actual, like... Is it a dungeon mechanic of some
there's
sort?
There's a dungeon mechanic. The three of the dungeons, the Mad Mage, Tomb of Annihilation, and one of the others, Waterdeep, maybe? No, that's bad. I don't know. But there's three dungeons. And basically what you do is there are characters that, like, venture into the dungeon. When you do, you get to do different things.
Neat.
I feel like if you venture into Tomb Annihilation, you literally get annihilated.
By the way, I will say that when I bought the pre-release, you get a limited foil card. That's one of the things you get.
Oh, yeah.
My foil card was a Tarrasque.
Oh, nice.
Which I did put in my deck and never got to play because it's super expensive. But I had to put it in my deck because it's super expensive.
I'm hearing this energy in Randy's voice that I think he's hooked.
I really, really like this set. Like... I didn't get any of the lands. There's some of the lands that are like skinned like modules, so they're like the old school module.
Oh, that's cool.
There's some of the. I got a couple gnolls that basically are the old school art for gnolls.
And it's nice!
It looks like the old school Dungeon Master entry. Like
I do. I have to say, I actually love the old Monster Manual art and all its strange crudeness.
Yeah. It seems like they knew what they were doing with this.
This is. I mean, there's a lot of D&D nerds and old school D&D nerds working at WotC. And they clearly are having a ton of fun with this. I'll be curious to see how it does. We've done pretty well with it so far, but if this does well, I gotta think that they'll plan to do another set of D&D. And if they ever do an Eberron set, I'm totally screwed. Cause I definitely but yeah, I think it's a really good set of Magic. Right now, we only have the set booster boxes available and the commander decks. But as of Friday, we'll have everything for sale. So.
Randy, because I did bond with Dragonlance as a kid, as well as a little bit of the Drizzt stuff, if they do a Dragonlance set, I'll become a Magic nerd.
Well, it's funny. Fizban is the first indication that maybe they're going to do something with Dragonlance in the D&D.
They name drop Dragonlance stuff occasionally in like their samples of play and here's how this spell works or whatever. As they have other D&D settings, like I think Dark Sun and some of the others.
Yeah.
But yeah, this does suggest that they could be thinking along those lines. And honestly, it's always just seemed like money on the table to not do more with their very famous settings.
Didn't they have something with Hickman and Weiss though? Like Hickman and Weiss got rights back to it or something. There was some
for sure. There was some there was some legal dealings with that. I think things got resolved recently, and they were even going to print those books that were at one point not going to happen.
Yeah,
that were some new Dragonlance books from them. But in any case, you know, here's hoping it happens.
If money changes hand, anything can happen.
When the mummy changes hands?
With enough money.
Oh, okay.
Enough mummies, Randy.
Enough mummies change hands.
I mean, you get a mummy lord, and it's pretty much what he says goes.
If you get a mummy lord and a mummy horde.
A mummy whore.
A mummy whore.
Well, that's a different
thing. If enough mummy whores change hands.
Don't slut shame the mummies, Nick. sorry, this is like turned into a who's on first bit.
We are doing another Magic. We're going to do August 20th. They're going to put out the Mystery Boosters again. They're going to do Convention Edition, which has, I guess, like, sketched out ideas for cards they didn't do as, like, bonus cards.
Interesting.
So it's going to be very limited, but we're going to hold our boxes aside to do a draft. That'll be Friday, August 20th. And then with any luck, Friday, August 27th, we will start up our standard Magic Friday nights again.
Cool.
Yeah, so people should, if they want to register for that booster draft, we do have, I think, 24 split slots. They should get on board soon.
So the sign-ups are up and running on that?
Sign-ups are up and running, yep.
Cool.
Yep. Also, Free Comic Book Day is about a month away at this point.
Again.
It's fast approaching.
Yeah, it is actually less than a month away. And that is going to be August 14th. We will see how that goes.
I'm predicting lots of people.
Yeah.
It should be fun.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's always just, is.
With the COVID stuff changing again, you know, never know what it's going to look like. So bring your masks just to be safe.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, news-wise, not a lot this week, just a couple of trailers. The trailer for Malignant, which is the new James Wan horror, probably series, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and, like, James Wan had kind of done a break from horror. In fact, I think at one point he even, like, had said, I'm retiring from horror.
But well, that, he went and did Aquaman.
Right, that was a short-lived thing. Did he do Aquaman? And prior to that, he'd done like one of the Fast and Furiouses.
Yep.
Fast and Furioso.
So he had taken a break, and then he's like, horror, I can't quit you.
So remind me, I know the Conjuring series I've watched. Is Insidious the one that I've watched? Is it got the red-faced devil?
That's his probably his biggest franchise, but he only did the first one, two. Or
Insidious?
Is that the one that Leigh Whannell
took? Or has he actually been? Was he on board all three of the?
I think he did
ones.
One and two, and then he produced three and four.
Right, but they've managed to keep a pretty solid pedigree, even though there is some drop off, I think. But like I've enjoyed. I think that series is quite a strong horror franchise.
But the drop off on Insidious, as opposed to the drop off with The Conjuring, is
Conjuring
less.
Is rough.
And
has spinoffs that are rough.
Yeah,
but yeah. So this looks like a Malignant makes me think of like Tumors, which makes me think of sort of like this thing that's like this ghost thing that is in her.
Right. So you have this woman who. Is what is she experiencing that triggers?
She's witnessing murders.
Yeah, it's just like she's seeing people
like
dream, killed,
like
but
visions
in,
or
like
dreams.
That dream, and then she finds out that the person was actually killed.
Right,
like,
and
she's
then,
seeing it in real time.
And she's
as
thinking,
opposed.
Yeah, it's as if the thing that is doing it, which seems like it could be some sort of demonic entity or something like that, or ghost or something, was something that has been with her since she was a child. Because you see this old like. You know, footage of like a birthday party, and she's like talking to the entity there, which is creepy. I don't know why that stuff always creeps the hell out of me.
It is creepy.
It is very much kind of like an imaginary friend, friend in quotation marks.
Right. A little bit like in The Shining.
Don't let your kids have imaginary friends. They always try to be demons.
Yes.
Unless you want a demon as a friend, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah, what was the kid's little friend in The Shining?
Oh,
his finger?
Yeah, it was his finger. Oh, crap, I can't remember.
Mr. Finger.
His name was Danny.
Yep.
The thing's name was know. Johnny Picklepants.
Yeah, Johnny Picklepants.
I don't think it was Johnny Picklepants, but...
Johnny Picklepants thinks you're evil.
Yeah, it was something like that.
That was... Stephen King, that was his first go, and then he...
his agent was like, can we not change the name? No, Johnny Picklepants or nothing.
And now he's done 15 Johnny Picklepants novels.
He's actually the lead character in Dark Tower.
Yes. He's an aspect of Randall Flagg, I believe.
Yes, yeah.
All right, but getting back to...
I want to say, I mean, we don't know much more
than
that.
This looks like a very visually stylish movie and features sequences where I don't know what is happening, but it looks like the world is changing around her, like, Silent Hill style.
Yeah.
It's almost like this entity can go wherever it wants, and whatever, like, he needs to get through, like, walls, like, dissolve.
Yeah, I couldn't quite tell what was happening. I wonder, like, to me... Silent Hill, while a scary game series, the movie, it was just felt like I was watching an FX test or whatever when everything would become all rusted over and clunky. Like, it wasn't actually scary. And so this kind of gave me a little bit of a flashback to that, and I was like, oh, I don't know, is this going to be scary, or is it too effects-y? Is it like what do you call it? Guillermo del Toro does that sometimes, too, with too much CG, and I don't know if it's going
to
be scary.
I think knowing Juan and his ability to, for his eye is so... specific and knowledgeable of what makes horror good and what how to ratchet up tension. Yeah. I think there's going to be... This one's going to be pretty strong.
He does a pretty good what I think of as like a kind of traditionalist horror thing, but in a very modern idiom, I guess I'd say. Yeah. But like where there's... He does a fair amount of jump scares.
He does,
And but he also does like creepy, unnerving things too.
I will say though that his jump scares are always earned.
Yeah.
Where I feel like... lesser horror movies just throw jump scares at you just to do them.
Yeah, I agree. I think he generally doesn't tend to do the thing where it's like a cat jumps out or your buddy just comes up and is like, hey, what's going on? Yep. You know, like, I think if there's a jump scare, it is because something is attacking.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So I'm just excited to have James Wan
do
horror.
I think he's a very accomplished horror guy, and I will, again, go to bat for the original Saw. Which he made. That was like one of his breakout movies, and it is a really cool movie. Neat mystery. It's not as torture porny as you think. In fact, there's very little.
The first thing they point out in this, they're like from the director of Saw.
Yep, yep. I think they're going back, and they're like, let's reclaim it.
Should.
So the other one we saw was the trailer for The Last Duel, which apparently is a true story in medieval France. This is the last judicial duel fought in France.
Oh, okay.
So it is the last trial of combat. A Norman knight killed a squire who accused his
Spoilers.
Wife.
Spoilers!
There's a whole... I don't know. We don't know how it's going to work. No one else can show up and stop them.
That's like, true. But this is a
duel.
So this is Ridley Scott.
Yep.
It also features Matt Damon and Adam Driver as sort of like the main characters.
So this is Affleck and Damon are co-writing and producing as well. So this is gonna be like their Good Will Hunting, but with more French dueling.
That's interesting. It's because like it's hard to do like a period piece that kind of I think feels modern. But like I was telling Nick off mic a minute ago, Randy, I feel like this is addressing some topics through this reflective thing of like the Me Too era.
Yeah,
where there's this suggestion that this the wife who in question was like. Sexually assaulted.
Yes,
but like there's like
the guy is claiming that he's
it was like it was a
it
consensual
up.
Or infidelity yes. or yep. something like yep. that. Yeah, and so she kind of has to defend herself, and then there is this duel around her that you know could involve the rise and fall. I don't know of dynasties or houses or whatever. Right. So yes, the topics look like they're very modern in that sense. But I don't know. I would be curious to see like what can you know. What can Affleck and those guys bring to the table as far as the script goes so it doesn't feel too thee and thou
I don't think
stiff.
They've worked on a project together since, what, Project Greenlight?
Maybe, yeah, it's been a while.
Since what? Project Greenlight was that HBO series about making a movie. They were kind of like putting their pedigree behind it.
Who is that? Affleck and...
Affleck and Damon.
Yeah, yeah, it has been a bit.
Yeah.
But they've certainly... Well, I guess especially Affleck has done... like more writing, producing on his own,
directing as well,
or directing, yeah. And I don't think what's his name.
Damon
has
not directed anything. He is. I mean, I think he's produced some stuff, but he's definitely been the man in front of the camera for the most part, and he chooses really interesting and good projects. For
yeah,
the most part.
I'm interested in it. I What was I going to say? It was Ridley Scott directing.
Which kind of makes me nervous because Ridley Scott is very
his track record in the last, I'm going to say, all 20 years has been ups and downs, and I'd say more downs than ups. But quite recent on that list is The Martian, and that was really good.
I'm looking forward to his other movie a little bit more, which is a
Martian 2?
Well, sure.
I made that up.
But a biopic about called House of Gucci, which is about the Gucci... starring Lady Gaga and Adam Driver.
Huh.
Which I'm weirdly excited for.
Perhaps. I don't know anything about Gucci other than his existence.
And the very expensive designer stuff he created.
Yeah. But I don't know. Is there crime stuff related to that?
I don't know.
He's not the guy who made stuff for the Nazis, about this, right? That was a different dude.
We were talking about it a little bit. Like, you listen to a podcast that sometimes you just... choose something randomly, and it's like you kind of get interested in it because of that. I think I'm going to go into House of Gucci with the same mindset.
No, that like, I don't know anything about. Case. That makes sense to me.
But this is knights fighting each other, and Adam Driver. I like Adam Driver.
Yeah, and Matt Damon has a weird medieval mullet. It's not wildly flattering.
No. No.
But maybe it's going to end up being such a good movie that people are going to be like, I need that.
I need that mullet in my life. Instead of a French accent, he will have a southern drawl.
It's got to be Bostonian.
All right, so that wraps up our news for the week. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics. We're talking comics the week of Wednesday, July 21st, and let's start off with a big release this week, which is Moon Knight.
Oh, okay.
People have been looking forward to this book more than I've ever seen people look forward to a Moon Knight book.
Moon Knights.
They do like Moon Knight, but he's always been a cult character.
Yeah.
This is, I think, the first time that there's been, like, a real marketing push behind it.
Do you think they like Batman, and this is kind of like Marvel's version of Batman?
Yeah.
And it's kind of the coattails he's
sometimes
riding?
Sometimes they play him as like the more extreme Batman.
Well, he has like cut faces off.
Within his history, there is that, although that was I'm going to say on the lower tier of popular runs.
Yes.
More often, he is portrayed as a guy with mental instability. You know, even sometimes questioning, like, oh, he's like, I'm on a mission from the Egyptian god Khonshu. Sometimes they're like, really? And he's like, maybe.
I mean, he doesn't even know himself who he is, honestly, most
right.
of the time.
He is portrayed as sometimes having dissociative identity disorder.
Yep.
But yeah, this character, just in the off chance you don't know, he's been around since the 70s, late 70s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Showed up first in an issue of Werewolf by Night.
Yep.
Got reinterpreted a bit for his own series by, was it Doug Munch and Bill Sienkiewicz?
Yep.
When he drew like Neil Adams, really cool looking. And was absolutely like Marvel's answer to Batman. He had little throwing discs and stuff like that.
He had a night plane.
Yes, he had a night plane. He had a butler.
No, not a night plane. He had a moon copter. Thank you very much.
The crescent moon was his theme.
So I feel like he's not been that Batman. He's an urban vigilante. But there's a lot that sets him apart from Batman. For one thing...
Mercenary background.
He has a mercenary background. For another, he fought sort of weirder supernatural villains than Superman. There was definitely a pulp aspect to Moon Knight.
Yeah. I mean, you could argue, like, Batman fights weird villains from Arkham...
Yeah.
But it's like they are. It's a certain brand.
Yeah.
And Moon Knight has had weirder villains. They've made sort of more of his mental instability over the years.
Yeah.
And
although the Meyer one more recently definitely kind of
for sure
did that.
And so this one is written by Jed McKay, who Randy, you've been following especially through
like
Black Cat, and what else has he done?
He's been Avengers Mech Strike of all things.
Yep.
And he wrote that Man Without Fear miniseries, led into the Daredevil stuff. And I feel like he's written a couple other things. Anyway, I like... Oh, he wrote the Taskmaster miniseries that just finished up. So, he does something weird here. He's using Warren Ellis' Mr. Knight. He's sort of like this...
The guy who wears a suit and isn't, like, superhero-looking. He does look more like a pulp detective. All-white suit, but with a white mask.
And he's taking on cases to protect the travelers at night, which can be literally anybody... it happens to be, in this case, kids who have been, or I guess teenagers who have been adapted into a vampire self-affirmation cult.
Yeah, it's like a pyramid scheme sort of thing. It's like the opening sequence.
Yep.
And I should say that he has a kind of a base of location called the Midnight Mission. Like, if you want to hire him, you go to this kind of, like, it looks like an Egyptian temple or whatever, like in some building in Manhattan or wherever.
Yeah, it's Manhattan.
Place. Yeah.
He's not unlike Daredevil in a sense. He's carving out kind of a section of New York as yep. his territory.
And somewhat surprising in this one and setting a sort of a secondary plot thing in motion is that there's somebody else who shows up who's like, oh, I'm a priest of Khonshu too.
Yeah.
And there's some mysteries and reveals to be had about this person. Yep. Which I thought was pretty interesting. But this first episode, in some way, it's like a a little bit of a day in the life because, well, he's talking to, like, a therapist yeah. about things
yep. Yep.
And recalling. So you get sort of, like, little snippets of, like, kind of like his last few adventures. Mm-hmm. Touches on some bits and pieces, I guess, from past different ones.
Most recently, the Avengers, the Jason Aaron, where he actually tried to take over the world.
Did that get brought up?
Mm-hmm.
It does, yeah.
Okay.
He's like, look, I know Khonshu's not a great guy, but he is my god.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought it's a good first issue.
I liked it. I thought it was really interesting. I'm a fan of Jed McKay's.
Oh, who's the artist? The art was nice.
It is Alessandro Cappuccio. Cappuccio.
Yep, not a name I know, but okay. It's good.
It reminded me, whoever that artist was, who million years ago did that thing about Poe Dameron's parents that Greg Rucka yep. wrote, and who improved as an artist.
Yeah.
It reminds me of that artist a little bit.
Marco Cicchetto.
Yep.
Yeah. Just at a quick thought, it's like it kind of looks like a little bit like the artist Ed Brubaker works with.
Yeah.
There's some of that to it.
Yeah, I can see that. DC has Superman and the Authority, which is Grant Morrison and Mikhail Genin doing a story of an older Superman basically putting together an Authority-style team that includes Manchester Black. This is a very strange project.
It is. It's because his Superman, well, you say older, but he kind of looks like how they used to draw the Silver Age Superman, where he's just got white temples.
Yeah.
But he's not, like, not wearing a cape,
but they
and
also,
his powers are faded.
But they also allude that Superman's been around for, like,
there's a
since
key
the 60s, millennia?
Yeah.
Well, there's a key sequence involving JFK in it,
yeah.
which makes it feel like this is, like, the Silver Age / Golden Age Superman. And it's just, like, another spin on it, like almost like it could be All-Star Superman.
Did I misread that? But there's something like King Arthur related as well in there.
He yeah. mentions having an adventure with the Knights of the Round Table twice.
Yeah, that was time travel.
Is that more
time
yeah,
travel?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was just kind of like Morrison likes to do that thing, suggesting that there have been lots and
That's
lots
true.
Of adventures, kind of like you do with Claws.
Yeah.
But there's a thing going on where his powers are lapsed, and there's still threats going on. And although, you know, Morrison is at his heart a kind of optimistic guy and he likes Superman for his optimism, he's portraying a world where, like, a little bit of superhero hubris has kind of put them in a bind, and it seems like things are kind of going roughly. And Manchester Black, in this case, if people don't know who that is, he was, like a kind of a scumbag anti-hero,
mm-hmm.
I guess,
yeah. Yeah.
who was, like, meant to reflect the Authority, which
yep.
were Warren Ellis's big kind of, like, scumbag anti-hero comic of the 90s, and be a guy who, like, hated Superman, and he does hate Superman,
yep.
and Superman is like, I need you to come work with me, and this guy's like, well, toss off, because he's British, he says
it's
things
true.
Like
he
that.
Is. He is.
It'd be like, basically, Superman trying to recruit John Constantine,
yeah.
You know, a guy who's just, like, almost antithetical to his approach. I don't know where it's going. It's a miniseries, right? 5-6 issues?
4 issues.
4 issues, okay. This is probably my favorite book of the week. I liked it quite a bit, and I like the art from Mikkel Janin.
Oh, he can do no wrong.
He is quite good.
He's really good.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'm a sucker for Morrison to begin with, and I like when he gets to play around with the DC Universe, and this seems like a little out of continuity, a bit...
Although in his sense, I know he thinks like all of his stuff is continuity.
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say this set is set like...
Right, this is just a future of All-Star Superman, or this was like from when he did like a Superman-Batman issue or whatever.
Right.
Nick, did you find that... I found it was pretty straightforward. It wasn't like quite as out there as, say, his Green Lantern stuff.
Well...
Only beyond just the basic premise, it's a pretty straightforward idea. Like we said, he has recruited what kind of person who would be his enemy to work with him.
I'm going
to
say I don't know Manchester Black. I know the name, and I know that kind of what he was supposed to be.
Yeah.
But I
you got you got everything you needed to know.
Yeah,
right?
I was not confused. It was very easy to jump into this and see what he was doing.
And there's a sort of a Phantom Zone escape problem
which
going
I thought was
on.
Really cool.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. It has to do with like these drones that were sent into the Phantom Zone and something bad that has happened.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a really good first issue.
DC also has Blue and Gold, new limited series. This is the first Booster Gold Blue Beetle miniseries, I think.
Yeah, those guys are always hanging out, but rarely get their own book.
I feel like at this point, Booster has proved himself a little bit over the years that he should be taken a little more serious. But
it seems like writers love nothing more than to knock him down so that he can be not taken seriously.
Exactly. Juergens did create the character.
Yeah, no, this is him doing his creation.
If anyone has a right.
The art is by Ryan Soup, which is really nice.
It is. I also liked the running gag of the various online commentators.
Yeah.
It was a fun thing to throw in there. People were like, oh, this is all staged, because it's Booster basically trying to rescue the Justice League. That's the consensus for this first issue.
Why are they teaming up?
Because Skeets finds that Booster's in trouble and he needs a friend.
Okay, so he calls his best buddy.
Yeah, and...
Why doesn't Booster just call him himself?
Because Booster doesn't... I mean, he's a jackass.
He's a dumbass.
Pretty much.
Right, I remember you played him in a game.
You
were perfect at it.
Thank you. I'm a dullard. I have a huge fondness for Booster Gold, actually. I read the original Juergens run as it came out. And so, while he's become kind of a jokey character, I always liked him played somewhat straight. Unfortunately, that ship seems to have sailed, although this is Juergens writing him, and he does play him a little more serious.
I think, he's taking into account more the Justice League International era, which itself was like 30-plus years ago.
Yeah.
Something like that was the 80s, late 80s.
Yep.
But it was one of the defining eras for the character, and so I think he's playing around a little bit in that playground, which was basically Beetle and Booster Gold were like the Lucy and Ethel of superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
Getting into hijinks, making goofy plans, and kind of causing mayhem.
Also, I mean, it's just their friendship, and I think that's on full display here, and that's really cool.
Yeah,
they're
in the probably top three bromances of DC.
Well, also, Blue Beetle has been sort of non-existent in the DC universe for so long because, I mean, Jaime Reyes is a great character, but they kind of wrote him off as, like, having a heart condition at one point before Rebirth. And,
once upon a time, he was dead.
And that all gets addressed here in, like, a couple panels, which I thought was really cool.
Does it take into account any of the pre-New 52 stuff, like when Max Lord killed him?
They don't reference that.
No. I was going to say, like, I don't think that's continuity in this.
I think everything's in continuity at some point, so...
Just grazed me. Put the gun to his head and grazed him.
I'm excited because I like the combo of this, and the art... And Juergens' writing was really good.
Was it like a longer miniseries?
Yeah,
Eight issues. And then Shazam is a 4-issue miniseries by Tim Sheridan, who's been writing him in Teen Titans.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of weird to see like Shazam. I know he's a kid, but it's weird to see him in Teen Titans, and yet it also kind of works.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting that he's like been going to, I guess, for help maybe to the Titans Academy. That's part of the book's current concept, you know, the Titans school, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you got some Shazam love going on, you might want to check that one out.
Or if you're enjoying the Teen Titans, which is this definitely, it takes place in the Teen Titans Academy. There's some guest stars.
Yeah, it's almost like a little sister series.
Yeah. IDW has a new book called Bermuda, which is by John Layman, aka the creator of Chew, who's a Chew miniseries or Chew series sequel series returns this week as well.
It's about the Bermuda Triangle.
It is about the Bermuda, but the island is called Triangle.
Sure.
And
the girl who is at the heart of it, who's like this 16-year-old girl, is named Bermuda.
Yep.
She's like a survivor of the strange lands that are, it's like this mysterious island with all kinds of craziness going on.
She survives by her wits as she navigates between dinosaurs, aliens, pirates, and more.
Very nicely put. It's almost like you were reading that from something.
Yes, it is. So yeah, it starts with a plane crash. Shows her.
She rescues
POV rich
character.
Kid, yeah, from merman slavers.
Yeah, it happens. There's dinosaurs and mermen and all kinds of. The artist is the guy. Is it Nick Bradshaw?
It is.
Who, if for people don't know, has a style that's definitely influenced heavily by Art Adams.
Yeah.
If you know Art Adams at all, you know he likes to draw dinosaurs and monsters and stuff, and so. Clearly those same passions inform Bradshaw's art, and this is like a good vehicle for him to draw all that crazy stuff. There's like some super cool giant lizards where he's drawn every single scale on them, and it looks like a big old weirdo chameleon.
They look like Sahagin. They do.
Yep. Boom has a book called Dark Blood. This was not what I was expecting. I thought maybe it was going to be like a gritty realism thing, but it is about Vamo's superpowers.
Yep. It was an interesting concept, executed pretty well. Mm-hmm. I thought the art was particularly nice.
Boom has a pretty good tracker when it comes to artists, but this feels a little bit like he's like maybe an immortal superhero or something like that. Or it's interesting. I don't want to give too much away about it, but it's an interesting take.
Yep.
Amelia Clark, a.k.a. Mother of Dragons.
Yep.
Has an image book called Mother of Madness.
She's branching out.
About a superhero mom.
And it's co-written by Marguerite Bennett, who's a longtime comics pro at this point.
Yeah. And it's got some pretty artwork. Anyway, Big Giant series on one of these...
It's got like a spine on it. It looks like an old prestige format comic, as they called them back when.
Image is another book from Top Cow called Siphon, about basically power transferring through people. It's another superpower book, but it's an interesting superpower book. They do that kind of thing, you know, with the darkness and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Star Wars War of the Bounty Hunters has one of its one-shots focusing on Jabba the Hutt as he is trying to get Han Solo's corpse back, and he hires a bounty hunter to go do it, and then I believe he has to go off planet and get involved himself.
I was going to say, why can't Jabba just do anything by himself? He always has to hire out.
He likes to sit around the house.
I want to say his Indiana Jones-like adventures through the jungle would be slow-going.
I mean, it would. Yeah. Well, he should just send Salacious Crumb out to do his dirty work.
I mean, I would be amused if he was, like, going through, like, I'm going to say, like, an Indiana Jones-type jungle adventure, mm-hmm. like the opening, but he's, like, carried on a, I believe you call those things a palanquin. Palanquin, yeah. Like, a bunch of servants, and then when he's, like, he thinks there's some traps up ahead, he sends guys to, like, walk into them. I want to see him just, like, basically going through mob style.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
I like it. Speaking of the mob.
There's also Nightwing, number 82. We've all been really enjoying Nightwing. This is the Mystery of Melinda Zucco, as it says on the cover.
I think we can say what the cliffhanger at the end of the previous one was. Right? She reveals that she says she's his sister.
Yep. Should we get the explanation for all that?
Yeah.
There's also issue 81 gets reprinted, which we did sell out of, and it's got another one of those awesome reprint covers.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they have some of the best graphic design on the Nightwing covers going in comics right now.
Damn, I see there's an Extreme Carnage Phage, so there's another chapter in the Extreme Carnage books.
Yep.
Has Phage been around, or is he a nuisance?
They're definitely making some new ones, but I don't know which ones are which anymore.
Yeah, I'm not sure on these either. I kind of like the cartoony art in it. It's a little bit like that Umberto Ramos style.
Yeah.
But I haven't read it, so I don't know anything beyond Phage looks neat.
Guardians of the Galaxy number 16, which is basically introducing Dormammu as the head of this Last Annihilation thing. So they're bringing Dormammu as a big cosmic threat, which is interesting.
Yeah. I mean, when they did Annihilation, they brought in Ultron as a cosmic threat, and it was super dope.
Yep.
I almost feel like this is not big enough for Dormammu, but I like those kind of change-ups sometimes.
Yeah. Chu, as I mentioned, comes back. Black Hammer Reborn has its second issue. It's been really good. Gamma Flight has its second issue. Savage Avengers has another issue. There are issues of my two favorite Image books right now, Radiant Black and Shadecraft. Third issue of Time Before Time. The penultimate issue of Many Deaths of Layla Starr from Boom. And the final issue of the Aliens miniseries that Marvel did. Also, if you are a fan of Chip Zdarsky or Matt Fraction, the third hardcover, Big Hard Sex Criminals, came out. This is the finale of the series, so I'm looking forward to checking in on it.
Have you read the finale?
I have not.
This was a series that, when it began, it had kind of a troubled release history, but when it began, we were very on board it.
Yeah,
it was
completely.
A fascinating story of two kind of outcast types fighting each other. Mm-hmm. They both had a weird power where time stopped for them when they had sex, and they decided they would have sex, stop time, rob banks.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's like actually these serious undercurrent themes about mental health. There's some weird heist elements to it. Like, it was a fascinating, you know, kind of style of book. So let me know how that ends and if I need to go back and reread it.
Yeah, we'll do.
And then in the X corner, we've got New Mutants, Marauders, and a fun in X-Men Legends where older creators come back and do kind of a lost story.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This one is about X-Factor and features Peter David and artist Todd Knock, who I don't think ever worked on X-Factor, but he's a good fit for it, doing an adventure, a lost adventure with that team, which I love seeing these characters back in that time period.
I think Todd Knock worked with David on Young Justice.
He did. That's right.
That makes sense.
When that relationship formed, yeah, so... I think that's... Is that it for comics?
I think so.
All right, we're going to take a break real quick, and then we're going to come back and possibly talk about Loki. All right, so we're going to do spoilers for the last episode of Loki. If you're not caught up, don't listen to this part of it.
Yeah, we think you're neat. Have a great day.
Yep.
Yo, Joe. Carry on.
Yo, Joe. So, Loki... episode 6, they definitely they pretty much promised us Kang, and they delivered, although not actually Kang.
Yeah, but, although when I was watching it, I was like, I don't know who this character is right now. Did you know right from the beginning, like, this is definitely him?
I did, because I knew the cast. I knew the actor had been cast.
Yeah. Okay. I did not remember that, so I was like, I said, the longer he kept talking, and because he on a little bit long, I'm going to say, I was like, okay, I think this is probably Kang. But it took a little bit before I felt sure of it.
But it's so Kang, but not Kang.
So Jonathan Majors, the actor, said, he's like, I'm not playing Kang in Loki.
He did not lie.
He did not lie. Because he's not playing Kang. He's playing He Who Remains.
Yeah.
Which does seem to be basically their Immortus version of Kang.
Yeah. One of their more benevolent versions of Kang. Yeah. Right. If you believe that.
Because he's still kind of a dick.
That is the, yeah, he's kind of snarky and clearly having some fun with the role a bit. But he makes out that, there is these many, infinite number, I don't know, hundreds, thousands at least, of other versions of him running around.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, by the way, all taking place at the end of time, where Loki and Sylvie have managed to track him down to his lair.
Yep.
And do we find that, like, was he like, I wanted you to find me?
Well, basically what he says is that he's tired.
Yeah.
He wants new people to sort of take over his position. And he has selected these two Lokis and put them on a path.
And what is it exactly he's been doing?
So, like, that was interesting. He's like, he did the TVA, the propaganda stuff is not that far off. He just kind of put the timekeepers in as a layer between them. But he did create the TVA to stop the multiversal war and all that kind of stuff. It just sounds like the multiversal war was more him with himself.
Correct.
Right, he's trying to stop more ambitious and dangerous Kangs from taking over and displacing him. He's like, I'm the middle of the road Kang.
I will put a little asterisk saying, if you believe him.
Right.
Because I think Kang can't be trusted. He's actually shown to be, like, even more powerful than Thanos.
I think with all the exposition that he did, that it'd be weird if most of it wasn't true.
Right.
Yeah.
I think most of it probably is true, but I would not be surprised if he lied about a thing or two here and there.
Yeah. Right. For me, I feel like this delivered kind of the finale that both Loki deserved and then the MCU deserved. Because it feels grand and big and kind of leads to so many possibilities within the MCU now that it sort of reinvigorated my interest in it.
I guess I didn't feel like I felt what the possibilities were going to be.
Well, it's now that What If is not a What If show. It's literally multiversal.
Right, but that's a meta thing outside the show that you know. Like, inside the show, if they had, like, shown me, like, flashes of other worlds being born and alternate realities, I wish they had, like, shown us that. So that me, the viewer, and people who don't know anything about, like, that there's a What If show coming up, could have kind of experienced it more.
They did show the branching and... That it's kind of a low-key version of it.
It's a very low-key.
But, I mean, you're giving us Kang.
Yep.
And you're giving us we know that Kang is going to be in a ton of different stuff from now on.
Do we? Like, again, if you were a viewer who was a casual Marvel watcher, you may not know that.
Yeah, and that's the thing, I think...
This is sort of my frustration, is like, I felt like that the sort of arcs that I was most interested in, can Loki find some sort of redemption? Is he going to hook up with himself in the ultimate narcissistic romance?
Yeah.
Which I kind of was hoping he would. Is that going to happen? And is, who's Owen Wilson's character?
Mobius. Yeah. Mobius G. Mobius.
And is Mobius going to get to jet ski off into the sunset? Those were not resolved, and I knew by this point that there was going to be a sequel series, but it didn't feel like this one had a true ending. It felt like it ended on a cliffhanger and without resolving enough cathartically.
I will agree with the Mobius thing, but I feel like Loki got his arc.
I don't know. He wasn't doing anything. Because
Loki became Thor. He became the person who changed. He proved that a Loki could change. He became good.
You know, and I kind of wish that had been sort of like front and center, but instead there was a lot of front and center about like what Kang was, like who Kang was. Mm. It was a big villain-centric episode, is kind of what they went out on.
Yeah.
And I liked Kang, I liked his portrayal, or He Who Remains.
Yep.
It was a pretty good portrayal, but I guess it left me unsatisfied. I think that I'm mostly hearing that people dug it, so I'm a little bit the exception here. But
if you want a dwarven atom bomb to close the whole thing out,
a what?
A dwarven atom bomb.
What is that?
It's a regular atom bomb, but built by dwarves.
Yes, then yes.
It's Asgardian. I figure you want dwarves to build.
Oh man, I hear dwarves and I just think D&D.
That's fair. The dwarf in Endgame built the whole like
that
his
is
hammer
true.
And stuff. So
that
dwarves,
is true.
The dwarves build.
No, what I wanted was Owen Wilson jet skiing and Loki making out with himself. And
Loki did make out with himself.
Yeah, he did.
Not enough.
And then she kicked him out of bed,
but,
via time portal.
But Sylvie did what Loki's do. Basically wanted what she wanted, and that was it. She couldn't see past that until the very end after she stabs him, and then she's like, oh crap, what did I do? But she couldn't change her thing like what Loki did.
I mean, she is Loki too, though.
Yeah, but she hasn't found
whatever the experience
Loki,
level that he
she's
has.
She's an unevolved Loki.
Yeah,
right.
She hasn't evolved yet. She may have after basically...
That's sexist.
I don't know. I figure she's going to wind up being the Enchantress, right? We think she's the MCU's Enchantress.
I would imagine so.
I mean, I know that there is a Sylvie who becomes an Enchantress in the Marvel.
I saw some people asking the question of who screwed up worse, Star-Lord or Sylvie, and I'm like, I believe Sylvie screwed up worse.
Yeah, because all the other heroes fixed the Thanos thing, but...
I don't think you're going to fix Kang for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm
curious... when the teaser, the stinger was just that there's a season two coming.
Yep.
Which I'm curious. I think this is the only one getting a season two.
Yeah, I believe it is. I love that they're
Is that the first time that we knew that was the case?
Yes.
I think the rumors leaked out about it already.
Okay.
But Tom Hiddleston has said that he is not leaving this character anytime soon. Good. So
it was clearly this whole season was a great showpiece of what he could do. Mm-hmm. Because you needed to be both like, you know, in a way, like they did. I noticed this, you know, for Elizabeth Olsen in WandaVision, you had to be very comedically deft to pull it off. Because there's a lot of, like, the first episode in particular was borderline comedic.
Yeah.
Like, just straight comedy.
Yeah.
Yep.
But then there was, like, this pathos and stuff that emerged over the course of it. And a fair amount to do. And he, you know, he pulled it all off with kind of with style, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought Hiddleston was great. I
And whoever the actress is who played Sylvie, I don't know the name
Sophia
of her.
Sophia DiMartino, I believe. Yeah,
I thought she did a great job, too.
She was excellent.
Although Jonathan Majors' Kang was really good. Owen Wilson's Mobius, great character.
Yeah.
Everybody else was solid, I think, in their roles.
I think Gugu Mbatha-Raw, unfortunately, like, Ravonna did not get to be... She got to be a nemesis, but, like... They never really developed her as much as I would have liked.
No, and I honestly think the payoff for her is going to be in season two. Something is coming.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm really excited for Majors. He's a really good actor. I liked him in Lovecraft Country, but he was definitely playing the kind of the straight man that was kind of the action hero in
was
a lot of it.
Lead?
Yeah. He was the lead.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this
he
allows...
got to be a smartass in this.
Yeah, this is him getting to chew the scenery, doing a 10-minute rant, kind of running down what's going to happen with the MC universe if you do X.
Right.
But he sells it with kind of this menacing glee.
Yeah.
My only gripe is that we have to wait a month before we get What If. I want What If now.
Well, there is that, but I'm okay with the wait. I honestly think this really did invigorate me into the MCU even more, just because anything goes now.
What do you think season two is going to look like, or do you have any notion?
I don't know.
No, because we don't know what... I mean, there's definitely...
Yeah, when is it happening? Is it after any movie?
I feel like Loki is going to show up in Doctor Strange. I mean, I feel like he has
that,
to.
Right?
Yeah, I think he has to. And then after that, I don't know, because the we're gonna get the real Kang, I guess, in Ant-Man.
Mm-hmm.
But
he's gonna be played by the same dude, though, right?
Yeah,
yeah. They,
he's just gonna be like affecting. I'm sure rather different.
So
personalities,
we know that Jonathan,
not unlike the Lokis and stuff.
Yeah, we know that Jonathan Majors has signed on and is going to be playing multiple versions of this character throughout various things.
I think that is an interesting idea, because it's like you kind of can't top the immediate physical menace and like big master villain plan of Thanos.
Mm-hmm.
But Kang is a more dispersed kind of idea. It's almost like fighting a swarm.
Right.
Or fighting entropy or something like
that. Well, Kang in the comics has kind of been boring for a lot of the time. And he's kind of a Doctor Doom knockoff. He does that imperious thing. So they needed to find him a little better for the MCU, and I think this is a good start.
Yeah.
He like basically doesn't even care about Infinity Stones. He's negated them. So, I mean, he's powerful. And, like, what does that mean for the Avengers? And I think that's an interesting question of, like, how do you defeat somebody who knows everything?
Yeah.
So I like that riddle, and I feel like Loki is going to fit in pretty heavily into solving that riddle.
It'll be interesting, too, if he is... do y'all see him as being the big bad for the next phase?
Yeah.
Everybody's guessing this. I don't know.
Or is he just going to be like... Is it almost going to be like a little bit of a thing like where, oh, this is the guy, the mid-villain for a Bond movie or something like that?
I don't know. I mean, Kang makes sense as a villain for, like, Fantastic Four, for Ant-Man. Like, they can definitely do it.
It is interesting to be a little unpredictable like that.
Because Kang has his, like, tendrils in pretty much, like, he was Immortus, he was Nathaniel Richards. He's a gateway to so many different paths. And the multiverse is just, now you can bring in the FF from another world and kind of make that sense. I kind of think
they might be doing something like that so they can get their 60s FF. Or they're from the a present, but a present where, like, JFK didn't get assassinated, and that kind of like a shining vision of the 60s still exists.
Mm-hmm. That'd be kind of fun. A lot of hypothesis about that this is all going to lead to Secret Wars. And I think that's an interesting idea, that they're going to combine the idea of the original Secret War with the Hickman Secret Wars and do kind of like. Just do this kind of giant.
What led people to think that was going to happen, though? Because Kang wasn't even. Well, he was.
Well, no. It's just
was
sort
he there?
Of.
No, he wasn't. It was Doom.
Okay, it was strictly Doom.
But I mean, the Secret Wars, the whole Hickman thing was, like, basically this one universe that was comprised of everything.
Right.
It just feels kind of a natural thing. This is just a guess.
Mm-hmm.
And we know where guesses lead us in the MCU, to lots
Mephisto.
Of sadness.
Always
and Mephisto. Yes. But I think it's a good guess that Kang is going to be around for a while. As for season 2 of Loki, if Loki doesn't go back and get a gang of Lokis as, like, a band that he trains...
Like a heist...
And has Alligator Loki with him, I'm going to be a little sad. Just because...
If Loki pulls a heist with multiple Lokis, I'll be very happy.
Yeah. I want Kid Loki back. I think he was a good character.
Yeah.
Am I correct? One of the Lokis that was hunting him was President Loki, right?
Yes.
Yep.
I want President Loki to come back as one-handed Loki. It should be fun. I don't think it should lose its kind of chaos... energy.
Yeah, no, it was a really good series. I liked it a lot, and I thought it had a good finale. So,
it is my favorite of the
It's my second
TVs.
Favorite, but only because I love the Winter Soldier and Cap stuff so much. But yeah, it was really good.
I don't have a strong placement.
No, Dave, you just want to talk about Evil and Lost.
Yes.
all right, that'll do it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.